folks, welcome back to Nadav Avner. This is Chris once again. Hey, folks, welcome back to Nadav Avner. Chris Wyatt Africa here on a lovely Saturday. May Day, commies, get your papers. Get out there, folks. Welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you here. Get started with the Indaba African news of the day. The headlines from today, the 1st of May, 2021. Zulu Queen Dlamini Zulu has passed away at the age of 65. This coming just 1 month after her husband had died. King Goodwill Swelitini had passed away last month. And 17 months later, South African Airways claims it's no longer insolvent. Yes. Former South African presidents Mbeki and Motlane have begged Ace Magashule, the ANC Secretary General, to resign and step aside from his position over continuing corruption allegations and charges into his time as the Premier of the Free State, in which he was involved in a multi-hundred-million-dollar scam to defraud an asbestos contract. At least that's the charges against him. And he refuses to step down. So two former presidents have met with him to try to get him to step down. Newsflash, this from President Cyril Ramaphosa. Apparently, according to Ramaphosa, corruption has damaged South Africa. I'm sure you didn't know that. Wow, shocking news. Thank you, Cyril Ramaphosa, for being so current and up to date. We appreciate him. And surprisingly, in March, South Africa had a trade surplus of $3.67 billion. Potentially some good news in a rather otherwise bleak outlook for South Africa. A passport scheme has been exposed in Namibia with a government official involved in selling passports to people who are not Namibians. Zimbabwe tobacco farmers have been harmed by the corrupt ZANU-PF kleptocracy, being forced to take their payments partially in U.S. dollars and partially in worthless Zimbabwean dollars, $60 of every 100 in U.S. and 40 in worthless Zim currency. Malawi has abolished the death penalty, and Uganda, after something like 15 years, is finally ready to launch its oil project tenders. The projections are Uganda could produce as much as 230,000 barrels per day, which, interestingly enough, is the same projection that I made a decade ago. So they apparently have the same expectations that we were looking at a decade ago. Meanwhile, Kampala is likely to ask China and the World Bank for debt relief. Kenya's president, Kenyatta, has loosened or removed the lockdown measures he put in place in response to the pandemic just a month ago. He's now lifted them. And an update on the information I gave in the previous news of the day, in which I said Tunisia would likely be seeking some assistance from the IMF. They have, in fact, asked the IMF, or will ask the IMF, for a $4 billion U.S. loan. And those are the headlines, folks. Let's get into depth a little bit about some of those topics right here and now. So first up, the Zulu Queen has passed away in South Africa. South Africa Zulu Regent Queen Dlamini Zulu dies at age 65, just a month after she took over the role leading the Zulu nation after the death of her husband, King Goodwill Swelitini. It is with the deepest shock and distress that the royal family announces the unexpected passing of Her Majesty Queen Siyewa Montfombi Dlamini Zuma, Regent of the Zulu nation. This is a statement issued by Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, founder of the Inkatha Freedom Party and traditional prime minister of the Zulu monarch. This has taken us by surprise and left us utterly bereft. On behalf of the royal family, I wish to assure the nation that while we are all rightly grief-stricken, there will be no leadership vacuum in the Zulu nation. Now, the queen married Goodwill Swelitini back in 1977 when she became his third wife. She's a sister of King Mswati III of Eswatini, ruler of the country formerly known as Swaziland. You know that country, the e-commerce capital of Africa. And meanwhile, as I said previously, South African Airways is claiming it's come out of receivership, or business protection, as they like to call it. After 17 months, now you remember famously that South African Airways, the corrupt, fossilized, ossified, inept patronage machine for the ruling African National Congress, which made idiotic business decisions, which weren't based on business, they were based on personal privilege, and that's where they came from. But that company, which should be done and dusted and not be part of anyone's vernacular these days, has been resurrected like a phoenix, something that will never go away, once again, by South Africa's African National Congress. Why in the world they want to keep this airline up, beyond the fact that it's clear that it's for patronage and favors for their friends, makes no sense whatsoever. The emerging new airline will have only 20% of its employees. pre-bankruptcy. But it went to bankruptcy in December of 2019. Of course, the South Africans use a euphemism for that, business rescue. No, it's called bankruptcy. You don't have any money. You have debt. You can't pay your bills. And on top of that, South African Airways cannot fly and has not since December of 2019. Yeah, in some ways, perhaps the pandemic was a godsend for South African Airways because it gave an excuse to shed it of all the excess dead weight that it had on the airline. South African Airways exits administration after 17 months. Struggling national South African Airways Friday exited from a local form of bankruptcy protection, as I mentioned, called business rescue. It was placed there in December of 2019. Its administrator said in a statement that they had filed a notice of substantial implementation of a business rescue plan with South Africa's Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. This meant they had effectively discharged the business rescue and handed over the operations SA back to its board and executive team. Oh, the same people that put it in trouble to begin with. The airline is one of a handful of South African companies that depend on government bailouts. Well, I'd say it's more than a handful. I'd say that's a very misleading statement to claim that it's a handful of people. Meanwhile, the ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule, who was told to leave office after 1 month, has failed to do so. He was told to resign as the ANC Secretary General by the party, and he simply ignored them. And here we are, a month later. Interesting that, isn't it? Anyway, so Ace Magashule, former President Mbeki, and caretaker President Motane, who sat in the office during a resignation period, both of them have apparently met with Magashule to try to beg him to resign for the good of the party. Ace Magashule meets Mbeki and Motane in 11th hour consultations for him to step aside. Embattled ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule met with former Presidents Thabo Mbeki and Kgalema Motlanthe on Friday as part of his consultations for him to step aside. Apparently, the meetings were part of a series of consultations Magashule undertook following an ANC National Executive Committee decision giving him 30 days to step aside, which have now passed. And he's still there. So, what's going on in South Africa? Same old, folks. Same old, the gangsters are running the state. Yep, absolutely. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, President Cyril Ramaphosa has given us a newsflash. He's let us know that corruption has damaged South Africa. Who would have thought? Who could imagine that corruption would actually have an impact in South Africa? It's such a lawful, law and order, law-abiding, respectful country these days. This isn't under the gangster state of the ANC cancer. Yep, that's right. No. So Ramaphosa has told us that rampant corruption has seriously damaged South Africa's economy and people's trust in the government. He testified a judicial inquiry into graft in the country. Well, you know what also damages people's trust in the government is your unwillingness to prosecute any of these criminals. Any of these criminals. None. The Zondo Commission will not conclude until we've all been buried for 100 years. Seems to be a jobs program. No prosecution coming out of that. Why isn't Jacob Zuma in the dock? Meanwhile, good news for South Africa. Its trade surplus, actually, is $3.67 billion in March. That's a good sign for South Africa's economy, which is famously obliterated, eviscerated by stupid, moronic policies by the ruling party, which have undermined economic activity. $3.67 billion, according to Reuters' report. It's the largest trade surplus on record. Wow. That's an amazing trade surplus in just 1 month. Widest on record, topping the record seen last June last year and well above the forecast of 25 billion rand. So it came in at 53 billion rand or 3.67 billion US dollars. Sales of precious metals and stones climbed 41%, mineral exports 22%, and 32% increase in vehicle exports. Of all of those, that's the most encouraging. 32% increase in vehicle exports. That's a good sign that perhaps the global economy is picking up again and South Africa is actually getting some value added, not simply exporting minerals, but exporting finished industrial products like automobiles. That is a very good sign for South Africa's economy. South Africa now surprises with what may be the most positive trade print versus consensus in the history of this series, says Rizia Khan, chief Africa economist at Standard Chartered Bank. Gold, platinum and copper prices have hit records in 2021, and that's two of the reasons why things have gone high. But the increase of 32% in motor vehicle sales, that's pretty impressive. That's good news for South Africa, which does produce automobiles, not the least of which are BMWs in Port Elizabeth. In Namibia, government officials have been caught selling passports for fake citizenship to non-Namibians. The disciplinary hearing of a senior immigration official last month has laid bare the extent to which Namibian national documents are allegedly sold on the black market. Eugene Salapito is accused of abusing his position as a chief administrative officer at the Okanja by allegedly selling national documents to people who do not qualify for citizenship or residency. He's a suspect in at least seven cases under investigation. Key to the schemes is issuing a birth certificate, a crucial document, which automatically qualifies anyone to obtain other documents like an identity card. So there you have it. Birth certificate is generated from the system. The official prints it out, fills it in by hand, while knowing the person does not qualify for a Namibian birth certificate. The Namibians learned that it costs anything between 2,000 Namibian and 100,000 Namibian to buy authentic illegal documents. That's an interesting term, authentic illegal. So it's not just Comoros selling fake passports and letting people come in. It's also officials in Namibia. This is a reason why last year the Trump administration banned travel for people wishing to immigrate to the United States on the 31st of January. And Representative Nancy Pelosi abused her office and lied on her Speaker of the House of Representatives website using government resources to lie about the president and claim that he had banned 350 million people from coming to America. Untrue. It didn't affect more than 30,000 people at most. And the reason he did it is for just this reason. Governments that don't have tight control over their passport issuing procedures, they cannot prove the provenance of the person to whom they issue a passport, and they don't cooperate on sharing criminal databases. Now, that's not the case with Namibia. This is a one-off, hopefully, and not some major scheme by the government. But the point is that this is exactly the activity that the Trump administration was trying to guard against. And they were called xenophobic and racist for those actions last year. Meanwhile, in Zimbabwe, tobacco farmers, most of whom are black these days, by the way, black Zimbabweans, most of them, they are in a pickle because the government, the kleptocracy that is ZANU-PF, continues to put them at a disadvantage. How? Well, for its purchase and sale, auctioning off of tobacco leaf, the tobacco growers are forced to take partial payment in Zimbabwean dollars. And we know what that's worth. You find toilet paper that has a higher value than Zimbabwean dollars. It's a bright spot in the agricultural sector, but waiting times for payments and exchange rate roulette can wreak havoc on their profits. Boniface Batuero sits languidly in the driver's seat of his lorry outside the tobacco sales floor in Harare, where farmers gather around Zimbabwe to sell their crops. Yep, he says he's waiting for his payment later today, 37-year-old tobacco farmer. I don't know how much they're going to pay me. Uncertainty has become a feature of Zimbabwe's biggest agricultural export. And why is that? That's because under the new tobacco selling regulations put in place since the pandemic struck, farmers get 60% of their tobacco payments in United States dollars, cash in hand, that they collect on the auction floor, which is where people should get paid when you sell an item. The other 40% is paid out in Zimbabwean dollars, Zim dollars, which is wired into their bank accounts and is worth very little. So how in the world can anyone make a profit when 40% of their income is restricted to a worthless currency? But this is the kleptocracy of Zimbabwe. And why would they do that? Of course, so officials can profit from it, not the farmers, once again. In Malawi, the government has abolished the death penalty. 37 Malawians are currently sentenced to death, and that now will be lifted. No longer having death penalty. Anti-death penalty advocates are very happy about this and are reporting this around the world, but it's not made major news. This from Cornell University in New York. Malawi abolishes death penalty. Historic ruling felt far and wide. I don't know about that, far and wide. This week, Malawi's Supreme Court outlawed the death penalty, ordering the resentencing of at least 37 people known to be under a death sentence. Sandra Babcock, director of the Cornell Center on the Death Penalty Worldwide and a partner of the Malawi Resentencing Project, has worked on capital cases in Malawi since 2007. She calls the ruling historic, and adds that Malawi has now joined the growing ranks of abolitionist countries where high courts have concluded the death penalty violates the right to life. Does it really? According to this comment, it says that the decision is consistent with the African tradition of Ubuntu, or healing justice. That's not exactly what Ubuntu means. The Cornell International Human Rights Clinic published a report in 2018 finding that Malawi's traditional leaders overwhelmingly supported life imprisonment over death. The report noted the reasons traditional leaders opposed the death sentence vary. The most common explanation was rooted in the belief that people can change and that prison is a place for reform. Many noted that rehabilitation is impossible for prisoners executed. Well, that's true. If he's dead or she's dead, then they can't be rehabilitated. But if you think prisons rehabilitate people, especially in Africa, you are very clueless. Unbelievable, the nonsense that people believe in. Uganda is finally ready to launch a tender for its oil pipeline projects, its oil exploitation. Uganda can expect to exploit as much as 230,000 barrels a day of production through its oil fields in the Lake Alberta region. Lake Albert. Yeah, excuse me, Lake Albert. I'm thinking Canada, Lake Albert region, not Lake Alberta. I'm thinking Canada. Yeah, Lake Albert region. Yeah, absolutely. This was a major project that was underway when I was stationed in Uganda, and it never really got anywhere. People always wonder, why did it take so long to get anywhere? Well, here we are now, 15 years or so later, and it looks like it's time. It looks like it's time. Total, who just pulled out of Mozambique's natural gas project, at least temporarily, the French oil energy giant, China National Offshore Oil Company, or CNOOC, and the presidents of Uganda and Tanzania signed the final agreements required to launch the Lake Albert Development Project 15 years later. That project is expected to produce as much as 230,000 barrels of oil per day. So it will meet Uganda's needs if they use it domestically with a refinery, but there's not much more beyond that for exports. So it's not the big cash cow that a lot of people think it might be. And proof that there's no cash cow here, Kampala is now asking for debt relief. That's right. Or suspension of it anyway. They want to suspend their payments to Chinese banks and to the World Bank, because they can't make their payments. Uganda said on Monday it might approach its major creditors, including China and the World Bank, to negotiate a possible suspension of loan repayments amid a growing default risk after its debt load ballooned 35% in a single year. The East African country gobbled up large credit lines from the World Bank, the IMF, and other lenders in 2020 to meet funding pressures triggered by the economic crisis induced by the pandemic. The loans vastly swelled an already fast-rising debt pile for the country that had long worried some, including the central bank and the IMF. Uganda's total public debt surged to $18 billion U.S. dollars as of December 2020. It's a 35% rise from a year earlier. So there you have it. Big change there. Big debt increase. In Kenya, the Kenyan president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has lifted the sanctions, or the lockdown restrictions were imposed just a month ago to slow down the pandemic, and he's now lifted them in a rather surprising development. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on Saturday lifted the lockdown he imposed last month, allowing for reopening of bars and restaurants, religious services, and schools as the rate of infections eases in the East African country. Curbs on travel in the capital, Nairobi, and four surrounding countries would be lifted. Schools will be allowed to reopen following an education ministry calendar. Religious services will resume with some restrictions, while political gatherings would still be banned. Yeah, political gatherings will still be bad. The evening curfew that was at 8 p.m. will be revised to 10 p.m. Here's a picture of a young man jogging past the jacaranda trees in Nairobi. Jacaranda is always lovely when they're in bloom, especially in Harare and Pretoria. So there you have that. And finally, Tunisia, as I reported previously in the last news stream, is that they would likely seek money from the IMF. And in fact, they have. Now, it's being reported by Al Jazeera that Tunisia will seek a $4 billion loan from the IMF, according to the prime minister. It says it's the last opportunity to save the cash-strapped country's economy. Yeah. So Prime Minister Hichem Mechichi told Reuters that they need this money. He's expecting folks the talks to last about 2 months, and in confidence Tunisia could secure the money. I too have confidence Tunisia can secure the money. Historically, at least under Habib Bourguiba and Ben Ali, the country was restrained when it came to spending and was prudent about their spending, which helped them become a developed, prosperous, middle-income country from desperately poor country when it became independent in 1956. However, since the Arab Spring, it's anybody's guess what's going on in Tunisia. So we'll see what happens there as it seeks money from the IMF. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in today, the 1st of May, May Day. It's a day that makes socialists warm and fuzzy all over the planet. It's a day to celebrate labor. Of course, not today in the 21st century, in the midst of a pandemic in which my government hands out money to people so they won't work and damages our economy, and then takes credit for jobs that they destroyed coming back into the economy. We created 1.3 million jobs. No, you didn't. Those are jobs that disappeared because of governors in states across this country. But welcome on the 1st of May, 2021, folks, May Day. And I'm sure the socialists and communists around the world are enjoying themselves as they celebrate this Labor Day, which in the United States, we don't celebrate until the first week in September. That becomes Labor Day. A little different than the rest of the world because we celebrate in a different fashion. Well, that concludes today's news of the day, ladies and gentlemen.